Scan the directory next to the elevator in the lobby of any big medical office building, and what do you see? A listing of every ology imaginable, including most likely a few you've never even heard of. Healthcare in the 21st century is indeed a multifaceted industry. So it shouldn't come as any surprise that the listings of bills sent to the House and Senate Health Committees this session deal with a seeming mishmash of topics. Everything from abortion regulation, diabetes education, and the abuse of pain medication, to concussion management, the regulation of midwifery, and the state's implementation of the Federal Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. Look beyond the bill's titles, however, and you'll find that most of the proposals focus, in one way or another, on access. Access to Medicaid benefits, access to specialists, and access to prescription and even non-prescription medications. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, access to medical care will be our primary focus. In a moment, I'll be joined by an expert panel of healthcare providers and policymakers. Let's start, though, with a legislative update from Brittany Muncy of the StateHouseFile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
Republicans say they don't want to expand health care to low-income Hoosiers if it means using the traditional Medicaid plan to do it. Governor Mike Pence says an expansion costs too much.
At a time that the federal government is running a $16 trillion debt, I'm someone that's very dubious of promises by the federal government.
So Pence has asked federal authorities to send Indiana a block grant and let state officials decide how to spend the money. The governor and GOP lawmakers want to use the Healthy Indiana Plan as a model for a possible expansion. That program requires patients to pay a small premium and then use a health savings account. Still, Pence won't commit to an expansion. Even if the federal government says yes to a so-called consumer-driven plan, he says that will be the start of negotiations.
I had a conversation with the president over the weekend. A number of governors spoke to the president about the desire for additional flexibility in the administration of a number of programs, including Medicaid. I'm hopeful.
For Indiana lawmakers and the StateHouseFile.com, I'm Brittany Muncy.
Thanks, Brittany. Back in a moment with our roundtable discussion. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. Because when it comes to keeping you informed of key legislative developments, we still make house calls.
Purdue Research Park. 4 locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
Just as medical specialists might argue over the best course of treatment for a seriously injured patient, lawmakers, healthcare providers, and healthcare consumers sometimes differ on what constitutes the best healthcare policy for the state. In both scenarios, the stakes are high, life or death in some cases, and so, therefore, are emotions. We'll do our best to take a clinical look at the invariably complicated issue of public health policy with Democratic Representative Ed Delaney of Indianapolis, the ranking minority member of the House Insurance Committee and a key figure in the fight to expand Indiana's Medicaid program, Dr. Aaron Carroll, a board-certified pediatrician and director of the Center for Health Policy and Professionalism Research at the Indiana University School of Medicine and one of the driving forces behind The Incidental Economist, an influential blog devoted to, quote, contemplating health care with a focus on research and an eye on reform. And Eric Bradner, who, as State House Bureau Chief for the Evansville Courier and Press, has chronicled and, more important, made sense of the session's most critical health care debates. And I thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
If we want to find a disagreement or a debate, healthy debate, Ed Delaney, you have suggested that this question that's now before lawmakers is the single biggest public policy question facing the state of Indiana. Elaborate on that, if you would.
Well, I think there are just two reasons to say that. The first is the scale of the human impact. We're talking about 400,000 people who currently struggle for or typically don't have health insurance, who would get it essentially at the federal government's cost with tax dollars that we are already sending to Washington. So that's a big human factor, and that's the most important factor. The second
and
is...
And the dollars...
The dollars
are going somewhere. They're going somewhere.
The dollars are going somewhere. They would go out of Indiana if we say no to expansion. If we say yes, then billions of dollars a year will come in through our insurance companies or managed care companies and then be dispersed among our hospitals, doctors, nurses, janitors at the hospitals, and on and on. So we're talking about billions of dollars of potential revenue to the state to take care of the health of hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers. That's a big decision, and it's at an order of magnitude that we rarely see at the State House.
And one study that was, I think, sponsored by the Hospital Association indicated as much as $10 billion impact over an eight-year period, and I think 30,000 jobs. So certainly some big numbers.
That's
there.
That's the scale.
And there are other numbers that we'll talk about in a moment that might suggest another side of the story, but we'll get to that in a moment. Doctor, this debate has been good for your visibility. CBS News, you've been on Good Morning America, you've been on The Ed Show, you've been on Stephen Colbert's The Colbert Report, all of which was a build-up to your appearance here today. So I hope you realize now you've reached the big time.
It's all angling to get here.
Thank you for joining us. You heard Ed Delaney say that this is a critical question, perhaps the most critical question facing the state. Is that hyperbole, or do you agree?
No, I think that that's actually quite accurate, and I think you're exactly right. It's, you know, we're talking about an expansion of health insurance that's almost unprecedented. The Medicaid expansion would cover about half of the uninsured in Indiana in one fell swoop. It would be an enormous boon in the sense that very little of it comes out of our pockets. Depending upon which report you read and how many years you go out, if we just look through 2019, it's about $8.5 billion of federal money coming here to give people health insurance. And the important thing to remember is that we're not debating whether people at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum should get private insurance or Medicaid. We're debating whether they get Medicaid or nothing, because there is no fallback plan if they don't get Medicaid. And so I keep hearing debates about, you know, whether we should, you know, what plan or how we should do it, or wouldn't they be better if they could get this, or there is no option. It is either Medicaid or nothing. And so therefore it's a huge, big question for people to be asking. Right
and
now.
Is it, when you say literally nothing, I mean, clearly people are not gonna die on the streets. What is, you study medical policy, what happens when somebody, if this policy were not enacted,
well,
or if in fact you said this covers, of course, half of the 800,000 or so Hoosiers who don't have insurance now, in brief terms, what happens to the others?
Well, the other half, first of all, are going to go to the exchanges, and they will be able to buy private insurance with subsidies likely from the federal government, because they make more than 138% of the poverty line. And they're assured that's going to happen, whether it's managed locally or at the federal level. No one is debating whether that will happen. We're debating what happens to the poorest among us, to those people who are making less than 138% of the poverty line. And while I try not to discuss this in sort of moral terms or in terms of using hyperbole, it is possible that some people will die. I mean, having health insurance is proven to be good for health. It prevents death. And Medicaid is health insurance. And we're debating whether people will get Medicaid, meaning they'll get health insurance, or whether they won't, because we don't have a fallback plan.
Well, and advocates say, of course, that the one of the things that's attractive, you didn't use the term free money, but the federal dollars would be reimbursed state expenses at 100% for the first 3 years, and then it would taper to 90% thereafter, which proponents say, hey, that's a great deal. Others, again, say it's still problematic because of the federal debt and the notion of federal oversight and federal intervention. Eric Bradner, you've written eloquently about this topic, and it has been sort of a moving target this session, but I thought you've done a tremendous job in keeping people apprised of the discussion. This was supposed to be the budget session, and of course it is. By statute, they have to deal with a 2 years of the state budget. That's the one thing they have to do. But this, it seems to me, potentially has much broader and more far-reaching and longer-term implications.
I'd say so. I mean, we are talking about 400,000 people here. And so I think it's fair to say that this is the biggest policy debate happening this year. So all of this is happening in such a political context. You've got Republican governors around Indiana deciding to go forward with Medicaid expansions, but some elsewhere in the country deciding not to, and Indiana's new governor, Mike Pence, deciding where he wants to fit in among those governors. You've also got Pence arguing for his biggest legislative agenda item, an income tax cut. At the same time, legislators are debating a Medicaid expansion that would ultimately cost some money. I mean, the first 3 years are funded by the federal government, but eventually Indiana has a share that the state would have to pay. So if you listen to Pence, he calls this a baby elephant, right? He says it's a gift from the federal government of this baby elephant, plus enough hay to feed it for the first 3 years, and then ultimately the state has passed on this full-grown animal with a huge appetite that the state has to feed. So the idea that a lot of Republicans are pushing right now is that ultimately the federal government is not going to live up to this 90% funding deal, right? The federal government is going to say, this is this great deal right now, but ultimately we'll back off as federal debt negotiations and budget negotiations take place.
You mentioned, of course, that other Republican governors have maybe reversed course on this issue in recent weeks, notably Chris Christie of New Jersey this week, saying basically it was too good a deal to pass up. Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, former hospital executive who effectively won office by running against Obamacare, as he described it, he too now says it's the right thing to do for Floridians. This will require some speculation. Mm-hmm. These dominoes, as they fall, will Mike Pence be susceptible to that apparent groundswell, or do you think he's pretty much locked in with the position he's stated thus far?
Yeah, frankly, I don't think he's going to change his mind on this. I think he's looking at other Republican governors, and their argument is, look, these are our state taxpayers' dollars that are going to the federal government and funding care in other states right now. And so if our states don't do this, then we're penalizing, we're subsidizing care in other states. Pence seems to think of that as too simplistic a view of this issue. He seems to think that that you have to really look at this in terms of the federal debt. I mean, he is a former congressman who did spend 12 years lambasting federal spending. So I don't really think he's going to feel the kind of pressure that these other governors are. In fact, I think he views them changing their minds as sort of a reason for him to hold firm. I think he's looking at things like the Wall Street Journal editorial that criticized all these GOP governors who changed their minds.
Saying which has embraced the metaphor of the baby elephant.
Exactly,
I think.
Saying that they all have their bad reasons. I think he's sort of more of that mindset right now, which is why he's
you
looking for
help. You talk about the politics of it, you know, and of course Ed Clare, who's a state rep, Republican from New Albany and is chairman of the Public Health Committee, I saw him quoted in the last few weeks. It might have been, I think, Eric, in one of your stories, saying that his sense is that a lot of his colleagues are not debating this extension, but
right.
are actually debating the Affordable Care Act, which, of course, was enacted by Congress in 2010 and was upheld, key portions upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in June of 2012. Is that what you're seeing on the floor?
There's no contrary debate other than a emphasis on the modest amount the state may have to pay. That's the contrary argument. We might have to pay a few hundred million dollars, which is a relatively small part of our budget, in a few years, very little in the next few years. That and this chimera, this mystical belief that somehow the program will collapse, that the Democrats are going to create a nationwide program that is going to be support, and they're just going to walk away from it and leave who? The Republicans? It's a silly thing.
Is it fear, though, that it's going to collapse? I know that's one stated
reason,
but is it also just political?
Let me put it real simply.
Point scoring, saying, I didn't like this before, I'm not going to like it now, and I hope my constituency, my core base, agrees with me.
Well, if what you're running is in the presidential primary in a few years, then maybe this is a great argument. We've got three categories of people here, okay? We got the good Samaritans. Those are the people who say, let's help other people. We got the reluctant Samaritans, like the governor of Florida and the governor of Ohio, who have said, I don't like this program, it's a federal program, but I'm going to help people with this national money. And then we have what may be the only angry Samaritan in America, who says, it's not my money, I don't have to treat you, I don't have to take you to the inn, I don't have to bind up your wounds, but I won't let anybody else do it either. That's a very unique position for Governor Pence.
Of course,
Governor
in fairness, we shouldn't say he's the only. You say he's the only one in that Samaritan
he's
camp.
That
but you
way.
Have Nikki Haley in South Carolina saying much the same thing. I think you have Rick Perry.
Well,
what
do they share in common? They're all angry. We got to get over that and talk about the sick people and talk about the state budget. Let's move on.
Talk about the budget and those financial implications, because as you pointed out, we've heard figures about what the cost would be for the state to do option A or option B, and the next week there's another batch of research with new numbers. I almost feel as if it's the kind of research about whether red wine is going to be good for my heart. You know, every week I go back and forth, and I still don't know whether I'm supposed to drink red wine. I guess we'll stipulate I can until told otherwise. But, I mean, I don't know what to believe. In some ways, I feel that's the case here, because the numbers from the actuary that the state uses are different from the research that was done on behalf of the hospital association, which is different from other studies. Where do we come down?
Part of it is sort of understanding, you have to understand how the numbers are arrived at. And, you know, the ones, obviously, if we take the worst case scenario, then the numbers will look worse. If we take the best case scenario, the numbers will look good. But most of the trying to be objective reports that have been done have costed it out through 2019 is about $8.5 billion from the federal government, and I think it was $478 million from Indiana. That means we'd expand the Medicaid program. It will become 29% larger at only a cost expansion of 2.5% for us. That's an almost unheard deal. But the baby elephant metaphor, it's compelling, and I understand why, but it's a little bit too simplistic because it looks at none of the cost savings that come to Indiana by doing the Medicaid expansion. In 2009, for instance, we spent $150 million in the Healthy Indiana Plan. We wouldn't have to do that anymore. We spent $15 million on our high-risk pool. That goes away. We spent $12 million in state-level tax credits, which are now going to be subsumed by the ACA. We spent another $120, $125 million in uncompensated care. That goes away. And we spent about $30 million in sort of hidden taxes and cost shifting because we all have to spend more when hospitals are taking care of the uninsured and not getting paid for it. You add all that up, it's like $330, $340 million savings. And if we'd paid 10% of the cost of Medicaid that year, it would have been about $63 million. We would have made money. It's too simplistic to look at this as only what we would spend as opposed to also think about what we'd save.
So the governor's contention, which he has, of course, back on February 13th, wrote a formal letter to Kathleen Sebelius, the head of Health and Human Services, asking for a waiver that would allow Indiana to continue to, as he sees it, expand eligibility using the plan you mentioned, the Healthy Indiana Plan, or HIP, I guess, which... this is one instance where you're in favor probably of a hip replacement, I guess, if I may.
I can live with either.
but this, you don't buy that that's going to be a cheaper, more affordable approach.
It's not that I don't buy it. You know, the state's own consultants don't buy it. The problem with the Healthy Indiana Plan and trying to use it is that right now it won't meet criteria. The Healthy Indiana Plan doesn't cover maternity benefits. It doesn't cover vision or dental. It also has annual and lifetime caps, which are verboten under the Affordable Care Act.
As you see it, studying these things, there's no way that
they could take the Healthy Indiana Plan and ramp it up in such a way that it would then meet the minimum criteria for what would be required under the Affordable Care Act. The problem is that Milliman itself says that will cost it would cost somewhere between 40 and 50% more than traditional Medicaid. I didn't realize that the opponents of Obamacare were arguing that it didn't cost us enough and that we need to spend more. So why would we want to require them to give us a waiver to spend 40 or 50% more than we otherwise would if we just expanded
Medicaid? So, I want to pick up on that. So a couple of years ago, there was this analysis by Milliman that said Healthy Indiana Plan costs about 44% more than traditional Medicaid. There's a new analysis that shows that expanding using Healthy Indiana as a vehicle would cost a tiny bit less, like
that
less
than
3%
less. That just came out this
past
week, right?
Right. But the thing is...
Here we are at the red wine again.
So here's the big problem with all of this. Hardly anyone at the State House knows what they're talking about. That's offensive but true. And here's the problem.
It's not offensive.
Well, you've got these analyses from the Family and Social Services Administration, which admittedly has a hard job, right? They're trying to compare a couple of things. Healthy Indiana Plan, as the doctor said, would have to be changed. I mean, it couldn't be used as a vehicle in its current form. Maternity, eliminating lifetime caps. I mean, eliminating lifetime caps, that's part of the Affordable Care Act. Those have to go away anyway. And then traditional Medicaid pays at a lower reimbursement rate than Healthy Indiana does. So it's tough to compare those two. And then, you know, it's also tough to look at the costs here because you've got Milliman studying what would come out of the state budget without looking at revenue coming in. You've got the Indiana Hospital Association releasing a report that does do a good job of laying out some of the revenue coming in, but then you have to try to marry the two, and it's guesswork because you don't really know the assumptions behind some of these numbers, and getting into them is really tough.
It's the most amazing balance sheet. The balance sheet has only the expenses. It has no income. It doesn't show the income to the state, doesn't show the income to the people, doesn't show what it does for small businesses, which is gives them employees with health coverage.
Well, those are the FSSA numbers. Now, the hospital numbers, actually, that's
they
the
do
ten,
that.
That's
but the
right.
state's
we
argument and the argument against it is a pure expense. It's a very modest expense, as the doctor says. It's a tiny expense that anybody would make that deal. Let's look at the benefit to our small businesses, which will have employees, low-wage employees, will suddenly have health insurance instead of being homesick and without their injections. We got to talk about the full balance sheet for the state and the public.
Mike Pence says he will consider expansion if he hears positive, feedback from Sebelius.
John, he was in Washington. He could have sold a healthy Indiana plan to the Congress and the president. He apparently either didn't do that or he failed. And now he wants to cram it down Washington's throat. That's not the way it
works. Now, Health and Human Services has given some other states waivers. And in fact, we just talked about Rick Scott in Florida. I think the same day he announced his change of heart on the issue was the day he found out from HHS that they were going to allow them to do some creative things at the state level and maybe push some of the beneficiaries into a private managed care kind of solution. So is HHS, you said the smart money is that they're not going to go with HIP as it's described now because of the limits, because of vision, because of maternity.
I think HIP as it exists now has a few things in it. The limits alone are enough to make it an absolute no-go.
So that's a no-go. So
I also think that the fact that it requires certain levels of premium sharing, that that people have to contribute, also is going to be a significant
5%, right, of their income?
Depends how much their income comes to the poverty line. Most people will probably pay less, but I think that will still be a no-go. The most interesting waiver granted so far was just yesterday to Arkansas. And what they got was they were going to put all of their Medicaid population into the exchange, let them buy private insurance with subsidies from the federal government. It's estimated that'll cost 50% more than what traditional Medicaid were. And this is where it gets a little odd and short-sighted. I think most of us, we want people at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum to get health insurance. If they get private insurance, okay. I don't think, you know, none of us are really here arguing it must be government insurance. It's just that government insurance happens to be the most cost-effective solution. Medicaid costs less than private insurance, so we can keep fighting for more private solutions, but they cost more. And since the arguments seem to be economic against it, it's an odd thing to argue for.
You know, Eric, the bill that's still alive here as we enter the second half of the session is a Senate bill that kind of a placeholder, really. I guess we talked about fallback plan earlier. Yeah. The notion is that there'd be something in place regardless of what HHS decides.
Right.
And, of course, there's now language about a block grant and the notion that the feds would just give Indiana the money. And is that just, again, a placeholder, or is that really going to be a viable piece of legislation to come into the session?
It's a placeholder. But so the key question here is, how much Mike Pence is willing to change the Healthy Indiana plan, right? Because you compare the Senate bill, which tells the Pence administration to do what it's already doing, which is ask the federal government to use the Healthy Indiana plan as a vehicle for the expansion, ask the federal government to block grant Medicaid, essentially, which is not going to happen. And then there's the Ed Clear bill in the House that died, but he's going to try to do something with it later on in the session, which would have told the Pence administration to negotiate with the federal government to do something along the lines of the Healthy Indiana plan. And if the federal government says yes to something similar to the Healthy Indiana plan, even leaving room for some of the changes that we've talked about, then Indiana would go forward with the expansion. So Pence is clearly not comfortable with the clear version, which triggers an expansion if Indiana can get anything like Healthy Indiana plan.
So things haven't even gotten interesting yet. This is just it's going to be there's a lot of watching here in the final few weeks of the session.
The governor's going to have to get down in the weeds on this,
He needs a law passed, and then he needs consent from Washington. And right now he has neither. I mean, and there's 60 days till this legislature goes home, and October 1, these exchanges go up.
All right.
So it's about time.
Unfortunately, we could go on, but we're going to have to wrap it up. And I should point out that we did invite a representative of the administration from the Department of Health to be here to represent the governor's vision of this, that invitation was declined. I thank you, though, the three of you, for being here for this discussion. Again, my guests have been Democratic Representative Ed Delaney of Indianapolis, Dr. Aaron Carroll, Director of the Center for Health Policy and Professionalism Research at the IU School of Medicine, and Eric Bradner, State House Bureau Chief for the Evansville Courier and Press. Higher education in Indiana comes with a high price tag, both financial and political. On the next, Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Well, Ed, you heard the policy discussion, lots of numbers, lots of stats. What are the political implications? I know nothing happens in a vacuum. Tell us about the politics here.
Politics, policy, and I'll tell you about Pence and principles and pragmatism. If you go back, and I think you need to look back a couple of years on this, you go back to the budget that Mitch Daniels put together with federal stimulus money that balanced the budget, and he made no bones about how we were balancing this budget, but didn't really say that it was on the backs of the federal government. That was pragmatic. And a lot of the things that the Republicans in the General Assembly are doing this year are pragmatic as well. Governor Pence has always stuck to principle, particularly on spending things when he was in Congress, spending issues. And he's sticking to principle again here now, even as eight other Republican governors, including the governors of Ohio and Michigan and more recently Chris Christie, have said, no, we'll give in to this. But there are some interesting issues here that I think that the Republicans in the General Assembly are going to be concerned about, and those are cost issues. And they see, and we heard from the panel, that there are going to be some considerable cost issues. The unknown unknowns, as Donald Rumsfeld might have said, with respect to the Healthy Indiana program, when at the same time you've got the certainty of this $10 billion in federal aid if we expand Medicaid for the next 10 years. Then we've got the Hospital and Health Association saying, hey, look, it's a $3.4 billion economic boon for the state over the next few years if we expand, and we'll be bringing in 30,000 new health care jobs. So there are some economic implications that I think the pragmatists in the General Assembly will be looking at as well.
Let me ask you quickly the same question I asked Eric Bradner. Given this push for pragmatism, I got another P in there, you'll notice. Does Mike Pence pull a Chris Christie or a Rick Scott and change course at some point?
I think a lot depends upon what he's going to hear from the federal government over the next 2 weeks and certainly the next 2 months. But at some point, somebody's going to have to back down, and the legislature has the votes right now.
We'll be watching. Thanks, Ed. As always, appreciate your insight.
For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and the statehousefile.com, I thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week at the same time. Until then, take care.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.